You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. You know, I had a little spring in my step this morning when I got up because I knew that I would be talking at this very moment to Liz Freeman. Liz, and we always have a great time together when she comes by. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. She is all over the country with it. Today we'll be talking about shrubs and perennials that bloom in late summer and into fall. And you may be looking for help bringing some color into your garden. I hope you'll give us a call, or maybe you've got another question. 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Liz Freeman, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today.
You were showing me some photos
mm-hmm.
that you took last night.
Yeah. Yep. Late afternoon, early evening.
Mm-hmm. And there were flowers galore.
There were that, and there was plenty of color.
Lots of color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's not flower color, what we're looking for is interest in leaves at this time of the year. And one, hopefully, I just sent them, so I'm sure Jill will work at getting them up. But one in particular was just starting to color for fall, and it's called a parodia tree. And it's a Persian parodia. Beautiful, beautiful structure on it, reminiscent of an ironwood. But the fall color on it is unbelievable. You'll have multiple colors on one leaf. So The picture that I took, it was just starting to color red around the outside edge in anticipation of fall. So we'll see some kind of blues, purples, and yellows in there as it progresses. So even if you can't add a lot of flower, you can add interest with leaf color. But yeah, we had Heptacodium in there. We had Cephalanthus. There was all kinds of fun stuff.
And parodia, is that P-E-R-O-D-I-A?
Yeah, it's parotia, like parrot. Parrot-I-A. So P-A-R-R-O-T-I-A. And there are a handful of good cultivars available. The one that I have is an upright, and I believe it was called Vanessa. And it's very, very pretty, relatively upright. I've had it for about 15 years, and it's only maybe about 4 feet wide, and that's it. So it goes upright. Slow grower, but really lovely. Don't have many issues with it other than one winter I wasn't careful enough, and the debris around the outside edge, the grass had gotten a little too high, and the mice got in and did a little bed and breakfast around the outside edge, but they didn't girdle it, so it's managed to survive. So that one I got to take the hit on, but very pretty. But there's so many things that we can add to the yard to give us good fall interest. So lots of plants. Helenium is an excellent perennial that is commonly known as sneezeweed, and it tolerates wet feet. So for those areas, it'll tolerate dry and it'll tolerate wet. As long as it gets plenty of moisture when you plant it, it'll do fine. And it can get a little bit tall. So it's like an aster where you can, or a mum where you can cut it back middle of the summer and make it bushier. And the color tones are going to be in the yellows, oranges, and reds. And really quite lovely. Almost looks a little bit like a black-eyed Susan if you go with the yellow. Flowers are smaller, and they're just cover the plant. But it's a very, very tolerant plant. So there's
I like tolerance.
You know what? In my world, if I can call it a hack and whack, which in my book means I can do anything I want to it almost at any time of the year, and it'll be just fine. That's perfect for me. Another one that I'm really liking over the last, maybe 6 years or so is the Calamintha, which is in the mint family.
Yeah.
And there's a nice white, and there's also a nice light blue that has almost a little bit of a lavender tinge to it. And they bloom from, about a month, maybe 6 weeks ago, all the way through frost. And the bees love them. Absolutely love them. One that just stopped flowering, a shrub that just stopped flowering, which is one of my very favorites, is a St. John's wort. And it's shrubby. It's got beautiful bark, exfoliating, almost reminiscent of a river birch in the type of bark as it develops age. Blue Velvet is one that I've had very good luck with all the way up to about the middle of the state. I haven't tried anything further north than that, but it is really pretty tolerant. It has got narrow leaves with kind of a blue-gray tinge and yellow flowers, beautiful, beautiful yellow flowers. At one of my clients' places, the people that come and go call it the bee plant because when it's in flower, it is just filled with bees. Oh. They love it. But the beautiful thing about it is even as the flowers fade, the leaves, when they start turning color, it's like the Parotia tree where it's multiple colors on each leaf. So you'll get anything from a yellow to a red and a purple on each leaf. And so it's just beautiful. So we also have our standards, our mums, our asters, the Rudbeckia. There's many, many Rudbeckias that we can add to the yard to add interest. The grasses are always fantastic at this time of the year. If you like big blue stem grasses, a breeder out of Hebron, Illinois named Brent Horvath, he's got a company called Intrinsic Perennials. Sorry, plug for him. He has done some beautiful breeding on big blue stem, and he's got some that are kind of purplish throughout the entire season, and that it intensifies during fall. So the stems are a really beautiful purple. He's got something that's a little bit redder, a little bit more red, and then one that kind of goes from an orangey red, and absolutely fantastic. One that is getting used more and more that's not a native for us, but is the Hakanakloa, which is the Japanese forest grass, which right now is just starting to come into its really peak-looking time. And we should start seeing blossoms on it, either finishing or kind of in the mid-session right now.
Yeah.
But there are tons of beautiful, beautiful cultivars of that out there. And it's one of those great grasses that does beautifully in shade. And the color is fantastic, has kind of a weeping habit. I know Ulbrich has some beautiful specimens of that, and the Oriola is beautiful. It's a nice variegated kind of light to medium green. So there's lots of interesting things that we can do. And then we didn't even start on the annuals that you can have out, which are going to go beautifully until we get a frost, which, you know, could be anything from next week to a month or 6 weeks from now. So, you know, those tropicals that you're not going to overwinter, I put them in containers with fall stuff. So you've got your alocasia and your colocasia, the big elephant ear plants, which until we get a frost, they'll be okay. And I'm not going to overwinter those. So they can stay out there and take a hit. But they look great with fall plants as well.
Liz Freemuth, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. You know, I've got to remind, as you're listening to this, you're probably saying, why didn't I get my pencil out? If you, after the show's over, if you go to WPR.org/Larry, you can hear this repeated, and you can even start and stop it.
And actually write it down,
and
right?
And write it all down.
Well, so, I'll tell you, for anybody that's listening to your show, I'll extend an invitation because for the next month, the second, third, fourth weekends plus Halloween, I volunteer at a couple of people's haunted house, and it's in Little East Troy, and I'm there every night they're open. And they do it every year for such a worthy cause. This year it's juvenile diabetes, and so they're looking to donate $10,000, so I donate my time. I'm there. I might be putting makeup on somebody, or I might be collecting money for tickets, or I might be, you know, helping somebody find a line. But I'll be around, and if anybody listened and they show up, ask for Liz, and I will answer their questions, and I will spell everything for them.
And, well, now you've got to repeat where, so people...
East Troy, the little village of East Troy. It's in southeast Wisconsin, and it's the second, third, fourth weekend, Friday and Saturday, and then Halloween night, and I will be there. I will be there. So anybody who listened to Larry's show, come on in, ask me a question, ask for a spelling. I'm all good with that.
All right.
It's for an excellent cause, so it's all
good. It is for a great cause. Well, Jack in Superior has a question for you, so let's go there. Mm-hmm. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I'm in Superior, and there's a plant here 4 or 5 feet tall, grows in clumps, maybe 10, 15 feet across sometimes, and big white flowers like a daisy, and no one seems to know the name of the plant. It's just starting to flower now. The buds are just opening.
Big white flowers like daisies. Do they have yellow centers? Do they have individual petals?
It's individual. It's a daisy, like white petals, and I can't remember the color. I think it's a light-colored center. But okay. I'm waiting. The flowers are just opening now. It's the last flower to bloom and fall up here.
Okay.
And, it grows thick. Nothing grows in the clumps. So it keeps everything out.
And now, the leaves, I have a question for you on the leaves. Are they dark green and kind of oblong with a point on the end?
Yeah, they're 2, 3, 4 inches long and very abundant. Like I say, it grows throughout the whole city and in these clumps. You can't miss it. It's 4 or 5 feet tall.
Okay.
It keeps everything out.
You know, the only thing that comes to mind immediately without seeing a picture is that there is a leucanthemum that does get about that tall, that has got very sturdy dark green stems and leaves. And once it forms a mass, it actually, nothing will get in there. But I'm not sure if that's what we're looking at. So, you know, if you could send a picture, that would be fantastic. Or anybody in Superior, if you could send a picture, we could take
a photo of that. And send it to WPR.org/Larry and we'll put it up and we'll take a look at it.
Yeah, because there's a couple of things, but not much that actually looks like a daisy. And anytime, you know, it's kind of like looks like a duck quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. So if it's got daisy-like flowers on it, it's probably in, you know, what we quote-unquote refer to as daisy, which may be the mum family or the leucanthemum, or, you know, take your pick out there as to how it's categorized. But that's what really comes to mind, and it's tougher than what we think it is. So, and it can't get very tall.
And so, again, ideas at WPR.org. That's the place. I gave you the wrong address. So let me give you the right address again. It's ideas at WPR.org. Jack, if you've got a photo or anybody else in Superior is listening and probably knows exactly what Jack's talking about.
Especially if it's just starting to open now.
And
if you can include, if you don't have a picture and you're running out there, if you could include something that has the leaves on it as well, flower and leaves, so that helps with identification.
There we go, Jack. Thank you. Mike, excuse me, in St. Lawrence. We'll go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, guys. Question. I've got some maple trees. I think just off the top of my head, some may be 30, 35 years old. Some might be 15, 20 years old. They're like 12 inches and some are 6 inches. But they're losing their bark from the ground up, kind of peeling off. And then some of them, they're almost healed over, you know, like when you nick a tree and then they get the scarring around where the wound was.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're actually healing as the bark falls off. But this is a 20-acre plot of woods, and they're scattered throughout the woods. But they're mainly around my house, which would be on what would that be on? That would be on the south side of the woodlot. Mm-hmm. So they get a lot of northern exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know what it is. And the fellow that takes my trees down occasionally, he has no idea what it is either. So I thought I'd call.
One thing that I would say you can do if you want to, as a layperson, go out and check to see what's going on in the interior of your tree, is to take a rubber mallet out and to gently tap. You can hear the difference between healthy tissue and dead tissue as you kind of tap around with that rubber mallet. And I would tap lightly to see if it sounds thunky hollow. And you may have something going on internally on that tree that's taking it out from the center out. But the other thing that comes to mind is, you know, if you're out in a 20-acre wooded area, you may actually have deer that are rubbing or have rubbed in the past, and that damage has just gotten to the point now where you're losing the bark on it. Not to say you're going to lose the tree, but that often does weaken a tree. If the bark comes off all the way around and it's girdled, you probably are going to want to talk to somebody, your guy who takes trees down, about taking it down. Is he on the line yet? Are you seeing any decline in the canopy of the tree?
No, not at this point.
Okay. And have you just noticed that the bark is coming off?
I would say within the last year, yeah. Maybe I noticed a little bit last year but didn't pay attention, but this year it's it's real noticeable. Some of the scarring is almost 2 or 3 feet long on the mm-hmm. side of the tree mm-hmm. where it's healed itself up again.
Mm-hmm. And what about production of seeds this year? Did you notice a lot more seed production in that tree, or was it about normal?
They haven't really gone to seed. You're talking about the whirly guys?
Yeah.
The little guys that fall all over?
Yep.
I haven't seen
they haven't gone yet? Okay. You know,
it's hard to tell because, I mean, I've got 1,000 trees around me.
yeah.
And I'm focusing in on that one tree. So there is squirrel damage, there's deer damage, there's all kinds of things that could be going on out there. And without seeing it, we can only kind of guess. If there hasn't been damage, human damage, then you look to wildlife and then nature. And you may have an instance where it got a little bit damaged this last year and, you know, probably about 3-4 years ago.
We had some crappy weather.
We did. And what happens is the system starts going, the plant systems start working, and then when you get that cold zap, it freeze-thaws and you get some damage there as well, which could potentially be what we're looking at also. But I would say pictures would be great to take a look, see what that damage looks like. Then also, it's a good time to take a look at either forest management, getting somebody out who's going to help you with forest management with that much acreage, hiring an arborist to come out and take care of individual trees or to give you a plan for the entire plot, maybe a little bit more than what you want to spend. Forest management may be more what you're looking at, and they can give you a hand with
it. Well, forest managers will come out.
They won't come out?
No, they will come out.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
They'll come out.
And with that much acreage, I would say that's a good thing to look at.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Grace emailed and says, why do plants bloom at different times of the year?
You know, the same reason is why some of us have blonde hair and some of us have brown. And some of us are
genetics.
Yeah. Some of us are night owls and some of us are day people. It's really just how we're made. And that plant, whenever it blooms, has developed a life cycle that is most beneficial to them to bloom at that point in time.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it. Bob in Verona emailed to say he has a native pollinator garden in its second season. He's got Joe Pye, he's got butterfly weed, asters, goldenrod, bergamot, and several others. Should he cut that back in late fall? If so, how far?
It really depends on how old that prairie planting is.
Second season.
I think really when they talk about burning, it's every 2 to 3 years, and the prairie people are going to yell at me because I'm not a prairie expert by any means. It doesn't hurt to mow, but what happens when you cut it off now is you limit the food that's available for birds, et cetera, over winter. So you do have seed heads in those plants that birds will feed on. So I don't know that you want to eliminate it until probably late winter.
Yeah, there you go. And you might want to wait another year.
Mm-hmm. I would. You want that seed to fall, whatever the birds
yeah.
don't eat.
Oh,
you
yeah.
want that to fall. And now is the good time to get it down on the ground, get some cold, and you know, let it do its business for next year.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Liz Freemuth. Join in with your gardening questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Anthony in Fond du Lac, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that I had some yard workers and they were like, we can't go back there. You got poison ivy all over the place. And I panicked. I went, what? So I found this app online called Picture This,
mm-hmm.
free on your iPhone,
mm-hmm.
and took pictures of it, and it was box elder, of course. And I've had so much fun with that, taking pictures of plants and identifying them almost instantly, plus their history. And if you like Latin names, you can have that too, and et cetera. And it's really helped a lot. It's free up to, I think, so many a day you can take, and then they want a fee after that if you want to pay it. I just wanted to point that out. It's very helpful to us. And
Oh, Anthony, thanks.
That's fantastic. It really, I've had other people tell me that they've had good success using that one, and you know, it sort of goes out of my head. Any little bit of help that we can get in getting our plants happy, I say go for it. Go for it. And another app that's out there that is really good for plant information is one done by my dear friend Dr. Alan Armitage, and he has got it's a cost, but it's like I think it's minimal, you know, like less than $5 or something, and he's got tons of information on plants on that, and lots of info on what to do in your gardens, when to do it, and it's vegetables, etc. So there's, you know, just starting to be more plant apps out there than they were for a long time. We really couldn't do anything except your basic house plants and what have you. So I think it's fantastic. Fantastic. Use away.
Anthony, thank you so much for calling. I'm going to pick that one up. I mean, and the other good thing about it is you see a plant or take a picture of it, identify it. Doing all that, you're probably going to remember it the next time.
Exactly. touch it three times, and then it's kind of stuck in our brains.
Oh, man. Joe in Hartford, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Can I overwinter a mandevilla?
Not outside, but definitely you can. You can bring that in as a houseplant. And my husband's one aunt used to bring hers in the house. And by the end of winter, it was crawling around the corner of her living room. And she had little things hanging it up. It was wonderful. And it's just transitioning that plant to inside. And we're getting to that point where when evenings are 50 degrees and less, you really want to be bringing those, any tropicals you're going to overwinter, into the house. And you do that slowly over a couple of weeks, if you can, and allow it to adapt to the light levels, because you're looking at about an 85% roughly reduction in light for those plants moving it in, even into a sunny window. So they have to have time to adjust their cells from thin to thick. And so you really do need to give them time. Otherwise, what will happen is all the leaves will drop off, and it'll take a little bit more time to generate new leaves, but they will adapt to whatever light is there. So yes, definitely, you can bring it in and overwinter it.
Limey stays out pretty late until I let Limey sit on that porch, on that second story porch for a long time. But then when she comes in with her limes, I put a grow light on her, too.
She does get babied, doesn't she? Now, I do have to say, bringing up the citrus trees, because you've got Limey, I've got Lemmy. And Lemmy, I had to cut all the way back this year because the scale was so horrible on it that I had to cut it all the way back. Doing well. It's going to come into the house. We are leading the pack because 2020, the hottest rage is going to be citrus trees for in the house. So
is that right?
Yes, that's what they are predicting. So I don't know if that's the citrus tree producers who are predicting that, or people have finally caught on that these are pretty satisfying little trees.
Oh, and Limey's got, I don't know, 10 limes on it right now.
Nice. Very nice.
I'm anticipating some. Something nice to drink, maybe a little something for the chicken that I'm going to grill.
Ooh, you know,
like a lime,
I like to put them inside the chicken. I'll do lemons on the inside, and then if you lift the skin, you can get some peel. You just use a potato peeler and get some of this, and you shove that in between the skin and the flesh, and it tastes fantastic.
Oh.
Yes.
And you know what I do sometimes if I've with one of the limes, when I'm done, I'll put it down the garbage disposal and turn it on. Mm-hmm. And that just smells so good.
Nice and fresh.
Nice and fresh. Well,
now that we're done with the cooking portion.
Enough about me. Let's find out what's on Sharon's mind in Lodi. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I've had beautiful geraniums all summer, beautiful big bushes, and all of a sudden, all the big leaves are starting to get white spots on the top, and when I turn it over, they're like brown scabs on the back, and then they're drying up, and it's just, I've never had that happen before.
It almost sounds like it's a powdery mildew of some sort if it's white on the surface, and I would say if you're, are they, I should ask, are these annual geraniums or perennial geraniums?
they're annual, but it's not like a powder. It's just it's
more like an insect. Maybe.
Well, no, you can like look at the leaf, and you can see a kind of a round circle in the green part of the leaf. It's not on top of the leaf; it's within it. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, all this brown, scabby stuff turns on the back of the leaf, and then there's drying up, and it's they're curling up, and I don't know what I don't know what to do with it. I mean, you don't, I don't see any insects, and I've sprayed it.
What have you sprayed it with?
Let's see. What's
for did you do for
rose and flower for rose and flower insects?
Okay, if it's not an if it's not an insect, the spray wouldn't do anything. Do you have a magnifying glass that you can take a look at it?
Yes, I do.
Okay, then what I would do is look at that under the magnifying glass to make sure you don't have any insects on there and check the underside and the top side of the leaf. Brian, I am sure, Dr. Death at the pathology lab, the plant pathology lab, would know exactly what that is off the top of his head. He, if he's got the radio on, he's probably going, Liz, you idiot, this is what it is. What I would do is I would actually send him a sample of it so that you know exactly what you're dealing with. If this is a geranium that you're going to bring in the house for overwintering, you want to have that problem taken care of before you bring it in. If it's a plant that you're going to say bye-bye to, other than you're going to say bye-bye sooner rather than later in the season, I don't know that I would worry about it tremendously. But if it is something that you want to get an answer to, I would send him a sample. And if you have access online, it's I think it's PDDC. It's Plant Diagnostic. Mm-hmm.
Plant Disease
Diagnostic Clinic.
PDDC.
And it's .WISC something. But if you Google that Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, you'll get the website up. And he's got very good instructions as to how to send a sample in. And he's very quick about getting an answer for you. And doing it that way, you're not going to do the shotgun approach, which is treat everything and hopefully hit something. You want to treat only for what you have so that you don't weaken the plant.
And you might even start with a close-up photo on both sides of the plant and just shoot that off to him. You'll probably get an answer in a day or...
Exactly.
Well, not over the weekend, but...
Yeah, he's very quick.
Very quick.
And the man sees everything, so he knows just, again, he's probably saying, Liz, you idiot. But that's what I would do to get a really good answer from.
Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. That's what you need to search for. Thanks, Sharon. Good luck. On to Linda in Sheboygan. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I have a question. We took a very large but very diseased butternut tree down the end of May. And we now have white, very, very bright white mushrooms growing in our yard. My husband has looked it up and said, yeah, those are from the extended roots that are still there, and the mushrooms are feeding off the roots, et cetera, et cetera. They're very white, and apparently they're very poisonous. So how poisonous maybe are they to animals, as we have some in our neighbors? Dog tends to go in our yard. And then also, how many years are we going to deal with these white mushrooms?
You're going to deal with them until the tissue is completely decomposed, because he's absolutely right. It's feeding off of that decomposing tissue, and it's perfect environment for them. So I'm guessing until that's gone, you're going to have mushrooms coming up. That can be anywhere from, 2 years to seven down the road. If you're concerned about your neighbor's animals getting in, then you probably are going to need to make a circuit around the yard every couple of days or so and get them taken out, whether that's raking them or picking them with gloves on and disposing of them. So it's, if you're talking about a large area, that can actually take you quite a bit of time. But that's really about the only thing you can do. They're going to keep coming.
I'd make sure that they were poisonous to begin with. Somebody who can identify the mushroom would be helpful, and if you just run the lawnmower over them.
Yeah, unless the dog licks the ground.
Yeah.
And I know that in some areas neighbors have to worry about that because dogs do come and eat mulch or they eat grass or something like that. So if you're trying to be super careful, that's me. I would just run the lawnmower over them because I don't have to worry about that in my yard. So that's where it kind of becomes more how either that or you let the neighbors know that you've got mushrooms that you think are toxic in the yard. And they may have to keep their animals under control a little bit more. That decision is going to be completely up to you. There are some people who can help you with mushroom ID. I'm not one of those.
No, I'm not either.
And I seem to recall, is he out in the Platteville area? Something like that. There's a gentleman. You might try looking somewhere in the state. I cannot think of his name. There's a guy that put out a good website on mushroom ID.
Actually, there's one. I can't think of his name either right off the top of my head. And then I've had him on the show many times from northern Wisconsin, too. So
that does a good job.
That's a really good job.
Yeah. And unless you can find somebody, you can go to your extension office and see if they've got anybody who is good on mushroom ID. That might be helpful.
Good luck, Linda. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have an email from Steve, and he thinks on Garden Talk a while back that he heard some talk about columnar apple trees. Mm-hmm. The idea of an apple tree taking up so little space is really intriguing, and he's wondering if you could offer any advice about them. Are there dwarf varieties? What's their sunshade tolerance, drought tolerance? He's thirsty for knowledge and hungry for apples, he says. He lives just across the southern border of Antioch, Illinois.
There are a number of options for small space trees, and the columnar are really
so cool.
They are so cool, and the amount of apples that they get on them is really quite amazing. The ones that I see frequently are kind of golden delicious range, and then you know some of the reds, but they are really cool because they are like poles with leaves and apples sticking off of them. They're really cool, very, very cool. The espalier fruit route would be another option to go with, and you can find plenty of trees grafted onto dwarf stock so that they will stay, you can find them to stay a little bit smaller in size. Espalier trees are those that are trained flat, and so you can train them against almost anything, so against a wall, etc. And you just want to be careful that if you're putting them next to a wall, that the foundation underneath is pretty secure, because otherwise those roots can kind of get in and amongst your foundation, whatever that is. So tons of wonderful stuff out there. A lot of work being done on heirloom trees and crossing those so that you're getting things that are going to be disease resistant and hardy, et cetera, good flavor, and also having some kind of interesting size. Easy to take care of. Almost anything that's going to be fruit producing does better when they have more sun. Pruning on a columnar is going to be pretty darn easy.
Yeah.
It's going to depend on which type of tree it is as to where it produces its fruit. So you have to know what you're dealing with in pruning so you don't take off the fruit producing little branches that are there. But otherwise, really fairly easy. And I would say pretty satisfying as well.
Oh, they're so much fun to look at.
They are. They are.
I just typed on my phone columnar apple trees just to take a look again, and they're really cool.
They are, and I've had a couple of clients that have had columnar put in, and you get a pretty good long life out of them because you are talking about a tree that has been bred to grow straight up and with little branches off to the side. So I don't think you get as long a life as if you had one that's allowed to develop its full natural structure. But I would say they get a good 10, 12 years out of them. So that's good.
And Cal called in to say that listeners who needed an ID, the person who needed an ID on the mushrooms, could check at the local farmer's market.
Oh, there you go. Good idea.
Many times there's a mushroom expert selling. Mm-hmm. That's a good idea.
Excellent.
Thank you, Cal. Let's go to Paula in Mayville. Hi, Paula.
Hi. We have had Cassandra ground cover in our yard since the late 80s, and it's always been very healthy. And about a month ago, maybe a little bit longer, large areas of it started dying off completely. And if I look at the stem, it looks like it's covered with a scale-like things.
that are kind of elongated. They're wider at one end and almost look tail-like at the other. And the main part looks like it has segments in it.
So this is an insect, is it, or a worm?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't move. I mean, it looks like it's just stuck on there. So I don't know.
Could be the cast from something else.
It could be. I would pick at it, but then again, I do weird stuff. And see if it is just the exoskeleton of something that was there.
Yeah.
Do you see a lot of this?
Oh, yeah. And the whole stem is like just, like you can hardly see any of the green of the...
Yeah, I'm not coming up with anything on that. There's nothing in my history of Pachycandra that is coming to mind with that. And you really need to, you know, as the plant owner, if you can get out there with a magnifying glass and figure out if that's insect or disease, then you can send it to the appropriate place. Because I would say if it's insect, then you send it to PJ and you can send him a picture and he will be able to give you an answer. If it's a disease, I would say you send that to Brian. But without knowing which one, you suppose you could send it to both. But
or send it to one. Brian always says he'll identify that it's not a disease, and he walks across the hall
to PJ
Leash in the Insect Diagnostic Lab, and he takes care of it.
Yeah. That is which way I would go, because nothing is coming to mind on that at all.
I can't help you with that one. I'm trying to think back. I've never heard that particular question before. I'm sorry, Paula. You've given me a first.
I like this stump us. Because now I'm going to look it up. I'm going to call Brian, and then I'm going to call PJ, and I'll find out. But
Paula needs to find out.
She needs to find out.
Patty and Eden, your turn. Hi, Patty.
Hi. I have the same geranium problem as that lady that called in about the light-colored dimples, spots on the top. And you turn it over, and it's like... I'm pretty sure it's rust, and I looked it up at the Master Gardener helpline where I work, and I don't know what to do about it, though. I'm frustrated that I'm going to lose all my geraniums, and I like to winter them.
Then I would get a hold of Brian at the lab and ask them if there is a treatment, because it seems as though there is something that you can do for rust. Rust may be secondary or it may be primary problem. So that's where getting an answer immediately from Brian is the better alternative than doing a guess on my part, especially without seeing it. So it has to be weather related. If we've got two people in different areas who are now saying they have the same thing. Yeah, that it has to be environmental, but that doesn't mean that we don't take it seriously. So I would suggest, as we did before, sending a picture to Brian and saying, what is this and what can I do about it? I think that's the best option.
Yeah, and you may want to get rid of the leaves too.
Definitely. I would wait to see what Brian has to say about it, because if you want to overwinter these, you're going to have to get them either cleaned up completely and totally and treated, or you may not be able to overwinter them as they are. So, you know, that's where overwintering really brings in a whole nother level of how do we take care of this?
Yeah, for sure. Patty, good luck.
Let us know what you come up with.
Yeah.
I hope one of you guys lets us know what Brian has to say.
All right. Thank you.
Right.
Bye-bye. Dean in Eau Claire. Hello.
Well, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a smooth aster that I planted about 2 years ago, and it's apparently I have it in a very good spot because it's currently about 5 feet tall and just putting out some very nice blossoms right now. But I'm wondering, can I be trimming that during the earlier summer months so that it does not get quite so tall?
Normally with asters, the answer is yes, you can. And I don't know that smooth aster behaves any differently than the rest of them, but you have to do that early in the season, very, very early. So like early summer, you know, just as it's starting to shoot up, you want to pinch that growth back, and you could probably do it a couple of times if it's done in June and then let it go from that time forward.
That's good. And I have a number, so maybe I'll, you know, try that with a third of them and see what happens.
Exactly. That's what I would do. And I'm pretty gutsy when it comes to hacking and whacking on my plants, because for the most part, they will survive just fine. So if they don't get flowers, and you may actually test the time period on that too, if you've got plenty, you know, do one a little bit earlier, do one, you know, maybe the middle of June, and see what happens with the growth on those.
Yeah, good testing there.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Dean. Good luck. Appreciate your call. Liz Freemuth, our guest today, she provides concierge horticultural services through her business. Her business is The Garden Whole. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. We are taking a look at your garden in the fall with our guest today, Liz Freemuth. Her business is called The Garden Whole. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining in today. If you have a question, I think there's one open line at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Caleb in Sturgeon Bay up next. Hi, Caleb.
Hi, I was actually calling with a question about getting some Queen Charlotte violets growing for an edible violet. I was told that they were a fall planting and then spring bloom. What kind of conditions and time of year is the best to plant those?
If you're talking about any kind of fall planting, and violets are pretty tough. Queen Charlotte, I'm not familiar with that cultivar, so I'm not sure if there's any kind of picky conditions that that one would require. Are you talking about planting these in a greenhouse, outside? What are your conditions?
Outside.
Okay. And prepared soil, if you're doing for edibles, I assume that this would be in a bed or something like that?
That would be correct.
Okay. Do you have a source for your plants at this point? Are you going to do seed growing? How are you doing this?
I do have a source, although the seeds are a little hard to come by at the moment.
Mm.
But the plan would be, from what I've understood, is you put them in the ground in the fall, and then they germinate in the springtime.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of curious when in the fall would be the best time to put them in. It seems that a freeze is beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you're looking for is a freeze that's going to be beneficial to the seed, not to a small plant. So what you're looking for is to time that so that I would say, first off, what I would do is look at the germination temperature for that seed if you're going to do seed. So you should be able to look up online. And what you want is the soil to be that temperature for germination when you want the seed to germinate. So if you don't want that to germinate until spring, if it's not cold treated seed, you want that to overwinter and then germinate in the spring. So you would want to wait until the soil temperatures are lower than germination temperatures, so that it's sitting rather than working at growing. So you're going to watch those temperatures this fall and put that seed down after those temperatures have gone beneath the lower end. You still may get some that germinate because seeds are like people. They do what they're going to do. But that will at least give you something to go by. Now, if you're doing plants, if by some chance you get plants, you want to get those in as soon as possible because you want those roots to at least have a little bit of a chance to establish slightly. We're really late for getting those things to establish. But if you do get plants and you put those in, then I would say after the ground freezes solid, then get a layer of mulch over those roots so that you don't get a lot of freeze thaw. What will happen with a lot of freeze thaw when the roots have not established heartily is that that whole root ball will pull up out of the ground and you've got a higher percentage of death if that happens. So those are the two things I would watch for.
All right. Good luck, Caleb. Thank you for calling. And Jane.
Good luck with the eating.
Yeah.
With the edible violets. They're delicious.
James in Milwaukee up next. Hi, James.
Hello. I heard you talking about lime tree, so I'm going to throw the citrus question to you.
Sure.
Go for it.
This is a true story. I'm 50, and when I was 3 or 4, I was eating grapefruit with my brother, and we planted a seed, and it sprouted. And I've had the tree since then.
Wonderful.
So it's It's in a pot, and I move it around the country, and every year I forget to water it when I bring it in, and then it loses leaves, and then I take it out and water it, and then it sprouts like crazy. This year I took it out, and I don't know if it was the rain, but the leaves are not growing back. They're browning and curling up. It just looks horrible, and I don't know if maybe you had any ideas. Is it just the wetness and the amount of rain we've been getting, or could it be something else?
It could be something else. If you had it outside when we had those torrential rains, what you could potentially be looking at is a root rot issue in that tree. Citrus really do like some drought as we move into late fall and winter, which is kind of why for us they like going inside, because it's a little bit drier conditions. They'll tolerate a lot of kind of dry conditions. So that you may have an issue with root rot. And about the only way you're going to get that tested is, I'm really promoing Brian today, is to send a sample of the roots in to him. And that typically, let's see, you're in Milwaukee, so you could probably go to your extension office in Milwaukee and take a sample in there and they can send it up. I would do leaves and then also a handful of roots from in the pot. And he should be able to tell you if that's what you're dealing with. With anything that's edible, if it is some sort of root rot, you do need to get that under control, or else it could potentially take the tree out. In doing that, the products are going to move through the system of that tree, and you're going to want to take a year or two where if it did produce fruit, you don't eat the fruit. You pick it off as soon as it develops so that you're not tempted to eat it, because that actually can translocate into the fruit, and you do not want to consume that stuff. On all of the products that can be used for any type of disease control, it will list, especially on edibles, it will list a PHI, a pre-harvest interval. And that's the amount of days/years, months, etc., that you need to not eat any of the product that you would be putting that chemical on, and take that very seriously. So you could, you know, normally I would say, yeah, the tree is going to lose its leaves. But in this case, you know, especially because it has meaning to you, I would go the extra step, take a sample, get it in and have it looked at to make sure you know what you're dealing with it.
Good luck, James. Thank you very much for calling. I could see where you don't want to lose that one.
Absolutely. We'll keep Grapey in our thoughts. We've got Limey, Lemmy, and Grapey, so we're all good.
There we go. Yeah. And you're right about citrus loving it when they come back indoors.
They do.
Limey just flowers.
And the smell is phenomenal.
Oh, phenomenal. Kurt in Brownsville. Hello. Kurt, are you there?
Did we lose Kurt? You know what? I can answer his question. We can't hear him, but I can answer his question. If he has willow cuttings, normally, if it was earlier in the season, I would say just pop them in the ground and they're good to go, because they'll sprout almost anywhere. But because we are so late in the season, I'm not sure that you'll have a high percentage of success in having those things root. Normally, when you take cuttings off of a tree, or, you know, if this is an Arctic blue willow or something like that, you would do that in the spring on new growth so that it's very light tissue that you're dealing with. You use a hormone, a rooting hormone of some sort. So, and really what that does is kill off harmful bacteria, et cetera, that will inhibit root development. So if you're doing that now, then I would say recut it, use the rooting hormone, and put it into a light mixture, soil mixture, and you may have to keep that inside in a garage or something like that. And you want to keep it moist. So lightly covered and keep it moist until the roots develop. Problem is, we're moving into winter. That needs a dormancy period. So, honestly, I'd say if it was me, you can do it. Just give it a whirl. See what happens. But you might take new cuttings in the spring and you have better luck.
Susan in Burlington. Hi.
Good morning. My question is about a bur oak tree. I have 5 very, very large bur oak trees around my old farmhouse. And earlier this spring, I had them fertilized. Now, one of them, about a month or 6 weeks after it was fertilized, the leaves started drooping and turning brown, and about half of them now have fallen off. Did I do something wrong?
No, I don't think so. And not, you know, not unless they did a weed and feed on it. But if it was strictly, if it was strictly fertilizer, no, I think really what you're seeing, because I noticed that in mine, too, my bur oaks are a little brown and crunchy right now. I think this year has been tough. Last year and this year has been really tough on the trees. And there are a number of issues that can go wrong with oak trees, but I wouldn't blame it on fertilizer. And if you're really concerned about them, have an arborist come out and take a look at them, crawl up in there, get some samples, etc., and I think you'll be much happier that way. But I wouldn't worry about the fertilizer as the problem.
Kit called to say he cuts his asters down in June or July. Remember we were talking about asters? He cuts them down in June or July about to about 2 feet.
Yep.
And they're perfect size in the fall, and they don't flop.
Exactly. And it's just remembering to do it early enough. You know, that's like mums. How many of us with garden mums, or whatever they're calling them now, how many of us remember to go out? But right around the 4th of July, it's like, oh, I got to get out and cut them. So, yeah, a wonderful
4th of
thing.
July, well, yeah, it's a pretty good time, actually, to think about it.
Yep.
Well, we are visiting, have been visiting today with Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services throughout her business, and you get all over the country, don't you?
Yeah, as often as I can. I love Wisconsin. I always come home.
She does a wonderful job with her business, The Garden Hoe, and always a wonderful job answering questions. I'm Larry Mueller, and you're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and my guest today, Liz Freemuth. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. And great to have her back. Questions for her about your garden? I hope you'll join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Julie was not able to hang on the line, but wondered about how to propagate aloe.
A couple of different ways. Some people who are really brave just take a snap, you know, snap a leaf off or a stalk off and pop it in the ground. And some can get that to work, but oftentimes what you're better off doing and where you have more success is just taking a part of that plant off. As aloe plant grows, you'll actually see it shoot off little babies or, I don't know, sometimes they call them pups off the side. And you can just snap one of those off and pop it in the ground and you're good to go.
Yeah,
that's
they're
it.
Pretty easy.
Yep,
pretty straightforward.
You know, you may have to, if it's a fairly large, if it has large stalks on it, you might want to provide a little bit of support for it while those roots are developing. But otherwise, you're fine.
Pam in Viroqua, we'll go to you now. Hi, Pam. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. I'm getting ready to transplant about 8 shrubs that I've been waiting to have them go dormant so I can move them.
Okay.
And I have 2 questions. One is, how soon can I do that? How do I know when they're dormant? And the other question is, once I have them in their new location, do I have to leave them as much space as what they're going to grow to be, or can I plant them closer together and keep pruning them each year?
What type of a plant are we talking about?
Oh, golly, there's 6 different kinds.
Oh, different kinds.
One is a Japanese willow.
Mm-hmm.
A couple are the winter berries, male and female. And the others I can't tell you.
Okay, that's fine. You've got a mix going. Is there a reason why you want them to be closer together?
Well, I'm putting them around a small deck, and I like the idea of there being variety, but if they need the room, I could just have less variety around the deck and put some of them somewhere else.
No, really, if you're willing to prune on them, you can stagger the planting around the deck so it doesn't have to be a straight line all the way across. If you've got the space for that, then you can actually deepen the width of the bed, stagger those plants so you can get your variety, and then you can also allow them to spread a little bit as they develop. If you're fine with pruning from now until, you know, something freezes over forever, then you can certainly try and keep them under control slightly with pruning. But I will tell you, they're going to look kind of bad after a while if you try to do that. So giving them as much space as they need to grow naturally is really a better idea. So again, I would look at widening that bed and staggering the plants, and you'll get the same effect. You have a little bit more work ahead of time just because you may have to widen the bed, but I think that would be a good idea. And I don't know that I would wait until they're dormant. At this point, you know, the winter berries, if the berries have developed already, you may lose them faster. You may not keep them over winter, but you can go ahead and do that now. And what I would do is just make sure that when the ground freezes solid, anytime you're moving anything at this time of the year, get them planted, get them watered in well right now until the ground freezes solid. Get a good 2 inches per week on those plants. Keep them nice and moist on the ground only. And then once that ground freezes solid, then you can put a layer of mulch on. And you can wait until January or so to do that. And just put a good layer of mulch on that around the roots so that you're moderating the effects of the freeze-thaw that we've talked about before. You don't want them to heave out of the ground. And I think doing that, you can go ahead and do it now and you'll be fine. You don't have to wait until they're dormant.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much. Jennifer emailed that pampas grass is overtaking her perennial bed. Mm-hmm. How do you get rid of it? She also wants to know about overwintering her geranium. Is now a good time to bring them inside and repot?
Yeah, pampas grass, yeah, good luck with that one. You're talking about really whole-scale killer for that because you need to get down into those roots to get the roots killed. Best bet is, you know, really after a hard frost is when plants generally signal the heaviest that they're moving their energy into the roots. And so if you cut that grass off right after hard frost and then paint it with Roundup or some other kind of killer, then spray paint, whatever you need to do, then that will go into the roots much faster. If you may not see as much death as you want by spring. Spring is another time. As soon as it comes up out of the ground, cut it and hit it again where you don't want it. Now, do keep in mind that if you're doing something that is going to translocate into the roots to kill, that could potentially move between roots. So your other option is to dig it out and just continue to do that. So those are kind of the two options. Or you can just say do nothing and then move your perennials and let the pampas grass do what it's going to do. That, you know, there's always a do nothing approach. Whatever works. And as far as bringing the geraniums in, 50 degrees and under for annuals, tropicals, etc., when night temperatures are really at that point, not when you get one evening here or there that's going to drop down beneath 50, but when you're really looking at those temperatures consistently 50 and below, then you definitely want to have been moving those plants in at this point. So I would say you're right prime to get going on moving them.
Norman in Wausau. Hello.
I've got a question on melons, muskmelons specifically. I get nice big muskmelons, and the things never seem to want to get ripe. What they do is they eventually crack open, and, of course, then they rapidly rot.
Mm-hmm.
Any secrets to preventing the cracking and getting them to ripen once they've reached mature size? I'm talking 5-6 pounds.
What type of muskmelon is it? Is it a cold, hardy muskmelon?
Well, it's Athena is the
and
Aphrodite is another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got one that's They call it a muskmelon, but it looks like a honeydew, and it tastes fantastic when it gets ripe.
You may try row covers over that to actually get a little bit more heat to stay in. You may get some ripening that way. But if they're splitting, I would look at how much water you're actually providing to those melons. And, you know, in some years, we don't have a choice on that. So if you have to do auxiliary watering, then you can cut that back slightly as they as the fruit starts to get bigger and develop. You, there's that happy medium between too much water and not enough water on muskmelon. And Athena, you may actually be a little out of the range to have enough growing season to get those to develop well, depending on what our spring weather was. And this year, we were all late getting stuff out. But trying a row cover of some sort, so the cloth, may actually be enough to keep the heat in so that you get enough for that muskmelon to ripen. You could try, I don't think plastic is a good idea because that's going to be too much heat and that might go too fast. So that might help you out. And you can do little cloches, so you could do PVC pipe, thin PVC pipe, and just do, you know, stick one in the ground and do a four square and just put some row cover over the top of them, and that might help out a little bit, and then you don't have to row cover your entire planting.
There you go, Norman. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck with those melons. Sandra in Woodstock, Illinois. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, sure. And I love your program.
Thank you.
My question is about lime or lemon trees because I want to start one. Is one LED full spectrum light enough for them or should I have two?
Larry, do you keep yours on grow light all winter or do you take it off?
I keep them on
all the time.
I turn them off. I keep them on. I turn them on all day and I turn them off at night.
Mine gets light during winter. Otherwise, it doesn't get a lot. You know,
Understood.
Yeah, right now. And I just use regular LED. And one is all I use. I don't know what you use for yours.
I've got mine on a pole lamp so that I've got lights at different levels. So I've got a couple.
Well, ours have arms on them so we can aim them. It's the same thing, so we can aim them wherever they go. And I think you're fine that way. I have no issues with mine. Larry has no issues with his. My mother, who has raised lemons for years, Meyer lemons inside for years, did not use any auxiliary light during the winter at all. And she would easily get 10, 15 on her tree.
She had a south-facing window, I bet.
She did.
Yeah, that's what I have, too. But I still like to put a little extra.
And Limey's been doing well, so we aren't going to mess with that. So I think even just doing one, you're going to be fine. You might want it coming from a couple of different directions if you've got a fairly large one so that you're not missing any area on it. But you should be fine. They're pretty tough.
Just turn it around.
Yeah.
Spin it a little bit.
We all play with our citrus trees when we take them in. They do not want for attention, not by any means.
There you go, Sandra. Thank you. Gail in New London. Hi.
Good morning. Say, I have two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is either brown or black-eyed Susans. Every year, towards the later summer, they start to get these black spots on the leaves. And that I always try to get rid of them, but that, you know, next year the same thing happens. What could be the problem there?
Probably Septoria leaf spot would be my guess. And you can spray for that. I know Brian has on his website a fact sheet for Septoria leaf spot. And so I would check that if you can. It's at the PDDC, the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic website. And he can tell you exactly what to spray on that. And I know you can pick the leaves off and you can open them up, but when we've got conditions similar to what we've had across the state this year, it's very hard to get away from anything that will happen in moist conditions. So you may end up spraying, definitely. And if your asters are drying on the bottom, you may have that same issue. It's just looking a little bit different. And so I think if you're not willing to spray, then you kind of tolerate the leaf spot and enjoy the flowers.
There you go, Gail. Thank you. Shannon in Shawano, your turn. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. I had a comment about the caller who called with the annual geraniums and the corky on there. I was wondering if that could possibly be, I believe it's called edema or endema.
It could be edema, yeah. And it could be that. And, you know, I was also off air wondering if we might be looking at multiple issues with that, given the weather we had. But edema sometimes looks like that as well.
Yeah, so that's saturated with water kind of thing, yeah.
And in the, again, with the conditions that we've had this year, it just, it's feast or famine, and when the water comes just unbelievably.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
Thank you for that. That was good, good suggestion.
Carol in Gurnee, Illinois, emailed to say she bought this improved Meyer lemon tree this spring. Came with a main trunk and three small branches. She had about eight flowers. Then all the other branches started growing. She ended up with one lemon about the size of a pencil eraser and a lot of branches. What should she do? Trim off the branches.
Yes, trim off the branches. You can prune that like you can prune anything else. And in fact, when you go out California way or Florida and you look at the citrus groves, they are pretty indiscriminate. They will just take a shearer and go across the top of the whole entire planting, and that's how they shear. The interesting thing about citrus is much different than the fruit trees that we grow here, where our goal is to provide as much light as possible to that fruit. Citrus is different. You do need leaf cover for that fruit. So it's not about getting rid of the overgrowth, the overstory growth, that heavy leaf canopy. You don't want to do that. But you can pick off those branches that are looking weak or that are growing towards the center that are going to rub and create issues. So definitely prune those things out, but you don't have to open up that entire canopy in order to get good fruit with citrus. It's not actually advised.
She only got the pencil size.
That doesn't surprise me.
Doesn't surprise me either. It's first time, first year.
Exactly. You may end up 4 or 5 years before you get a really good crop, depending on the age of that improved citrus tree. And they can look relatively large when you get them in a pot because it's in a pot. But if you look at those out in the landscape, they're really like normal sized trees. So we are talking about fairly young ones.
And the fertilizing is kind of important too, I think, in terms
it
of
is.
Not fertilizing
too much.
Too much.
And at the wrong time. It's like anything that you don't really want to fertilize until after the fruit is starting to develop, after it's flowered, because otherwise you can put the food into vegetative growth rather than in allowing the plant itself to develop its fruit. So that's one thing to consider also. But fertilizing on your citrus is really important. And just use a citrus fertilizer. People ask me all the time, what do you use? I use something that is labeled for citrus.
And I just use fish emulsion fertilizer. That's all I use.
Which works out great.
Works great.
Sometimes people say they think that they need it a little bit more acidic. Unless you have a soil test done, I don't know that I would mess with it.
Yep. Loretta in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I'm a kind of a beginner gardener. My husband was a master gardener and extraordinaire, but he's dead. And I'm trying to make things look decent again. And I've really put forth a lot of effort to get rid of weeds, and I'm proud of myself for that. Weed du jour is what I call it. But I have Russian sage that I see other people's, and it looks a lot more alert than mine. Mine just kind of is on the ground, and it's still pretty, but I think it was better before.
Okay, welcome to gardening. I applaud you on your weed control, because that is, to many people, the most distasteful part of gardening. I find it relatively satisfying to pull things out of the ground and let everything have its space. So good for you. Small steps, one thing at a time, and you're going to flourish just like your garden will flourish. Russian sage, definitely. If it's an older cultivar, you really can cut it back in the middle of summer. You can actually cut it back. Oh, when it gets to be about 18 inches high, cut it back once, and then you might want to cut it back again. And we're talking about taking maybe half to two-thirds of the growth off, and that will that will really take it down enough that you should get spikes that stand up nicely and more of them rather than a few heavy that flop over. If it's an older cultivar, you may have to do that. You might also want to look at maybe replacing it with one of the newer cultivars that are bred to be a little bit shorter and do not need as much maintenance. So that's something for you to kind of consider in your workload, in your daily workload. What can you do and what can't you do? And it's always a good reason to go plant shopping too.
Yeah. For sure.
But keep it up. You're doing great.
Thanks, Loretta. Appreciate it. Okay, bye-bye. Erin in Grafton. Hi.
Hi. Hi. I have a very wooded 3 acres. One of the problems, I have two questions. One is a maple tree, which has had the spots, you know, throughout the years, and I know that it doesn't affect the tree, but this year, about a third of the maple tree has absolutely no leaves on it. And it's a big maple, so I'm just concerned about what could be happening to it. And the other thing was, you know, I have a lot of ash trees. You talked about the forestry department coming out. Is that a good thing to do where they'll come out and actually assess what's going on with all your trees?
I don't know what the acreage limit is on that. Do you, Larry?
No,
I don't,
not off the top
I don't
of my
head. Know. You'd have to call and ask them if they would be willing to do that, because I think they may have X amount of acres before it's considered forestry. And forestry control or maintenance. So I would contact the forest department and find out. You should have somebody for your area, and to just be looking on the website and figure that one out. As far as the maple tree goes, have you noticed a lack of canopy in years past, or is this the first year?
I think this is the first year. Like you said, it had that little spot, but yeah. That was about it.
Yeah, if it was spots on the leaves, you know, that to me is really more tar spot. And typically that's cosmetic on a healthy tree and unpleasantly cosmetic. And,
right.
And it will increase in intensity and then all kind of drop off. It's more of a cyclical issue if a tree is susceptible to it, and not often recommended that you treat for that anyway. But there may be something else going on, and especially in a maple, I worry about verticillium, et cetera. And this is a good time to call an arborist out, and especially when it still has leaves on it, so that they can take a look at what does the tree look like during the growing season. And they can give you a hand on where to go from there and you know, whether it's treatable and whether it's worth doing anything about. Especially if you have ash trees, you're going to lose some trees. So, you know, you don't want to lose any more than you absolutely have to.
There you go. Thank you so much. Certified arborist.
Certified arborist. Lovely list. Wisconsin has got fantastic arborists.
And Louise in West Allis. Hello.
Hi. Are you there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I have a 5-foot viburnum Shasta double file. It's just pot-marked with all sorts of itty-bitty little holes, all the leaves. I have seen some sort of bug crawling on it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this tree salvageable, or will this happen? It'll happen next year, obviously, but the question is, will this die?
It might happen again next year. It might not. It sounds like viburnum leaf borer, and that one is treatable. So I would check out fact sheets. Brian might even have one on viburnum leaf borer on the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, or PJ Leash could give a hand with that.
And thank you so much for that question. And Liz, thank you so much as well. It's always a pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again?
I will come back whenever you like. I love doing this.
And she will be back. Liz Freemuth, her business is called The Garden Hoe. It's always great to have her. TheGardenHoe.com. That's her website. TheGardenHoe.com. Go there. Lots of good information there. Monday, our physical therapists come by. And then next week on Friday, Mark Dwyer comes by to talk about ornamental grasses and other things. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Have a great weekend, but stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.